Let's go! 3, 2, 1!
New plans!
Welcome to another episode of Functional Fundamentals. I'm Dave.
I'm Mike. I'm Brad.
And today we are going to be talking about meal plans, meal prepping, and everything in between.
Food. Yum.
Food. Yes.
Can you make me a meal plan?
Yes. No.
Yeah.
No. Actually, I can, but it's horseshit.
It's 4 ounces of blueberries every 2 hours and...
Three almonds.
Tuna fish.
Brown rice.
Steamed.
Yeah. Brown steamed rice.
For breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
The long grain rice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And all the same. And never deviate or you will die.
And water and pre-workout.
Okay.
A lot of pre-workout. Like when you wake up in the morning, snort a line of pre-workout.
And then mix a bunch of cocaine in there.
Yeah. For sure. Your first line is just the pre-workout. Your second line is the cocaine and the pre-workout.
They'll calm you down a little bit.
Right. Yeah. Because pre-workout, believe it or not, it gets you more hopped up. So you have to do cocaine to bring yourself down.
Yes. And then don't forget to do blueberries in the end.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The bloobs.
Get the blueberries.
The bloobs. You actually blend them up, put them in a syringe, and then inject them.
Right? Mm. Neck.
No. In the neck?
In your pupil.
Savage.
Well, I'd like the neck. I don't like getting near my eyes.
You're not going to be a specimen.
Yeah. Sorry, Mike, you're out. You're out of the screw.
You're out. I told you, you have to follow this exactly, or you fail as a human being.
And if you're allergic to blueberries or tuna fish, tough.
Yeah. Tough it out.
Are people allergic to blueberries or tuna fish?
Blueberries, yeah.
Fish.
Fish allergy.
Okay. I thought it was like a shellfish allergy.
It's fish.
Anyway.
Or almonds. They're still stuck. Just kill them.
Got it.
Yeah, they eat it. Might as well just give it to them. Let them die.
They'll lose a lot of weight, though.
But
for sure, they'll make weight for sure.
Yes.
Yeah, they get
Plus,
that,
it's
they
better
get
to eliminate the
decomposition meal plan.
But basically, that is the guidelines that you get from most people who make meal plans.
That is the run-of-the-mill meal plan.
What are you talking about? That was a legit meal plan I've been following for years.
And then they'll charge you $100 or $200.
Yeah, which is kind of expensive when I have to buy the cocaine anyway.
I know. It doesn't even come with it's like starter cocaine.
Yeah, right. The starter cocaine.
But that's what everyone expects when they ask me for a meal plan. They think it's easy. And they don't want to hear nutrition advice.
I mean, that was the real meal plan?
But that's what people want. They want a certain time, certain foods.
Hang up the phone, cancel the order of the cocaine.
Shit.
Pablo, we won't be needing your services after all.
My doctor's going to be so mad when he gets here. We tell him, no, just kidding.
It was a joke all along.
No, seriously, guys, I need at least $120 plan.
Or we're all dead.
Pablo does not, he doesn't have the same sense of humor as we do.
It's unfortunate.
Well, if the pod gets cut short, we died.
Yeah.
All right, so tell us what a real meal plan.
Well, first off, what are the expectations?
Oh, yeah, let's go back to that.
What are their expectations, or what should the expectations be?
Start with what they are.
Yeah, your experiences, and then a more realistic approach to it based on your experiences.
Okay, so their expectations is absolutely everything we just joked about. It is...
magic.
Essentially magic. Give them something they don't have to think about.
Blue pill.
Give them times, the recipes, or the components of the meal, and exactly what to eat at what times. And they don't have to put any thought process in it. They don't have to do any work. Essentially, buy the food, eat it. And that's what they want. And they are expecting their results. And most of the times, their goals are unreasonable. Like, I want to gain 25 pounds in 2 months. Or I want to lose, 15 pounds of fat in 1 month or 2 months. Which could or could not be reasonable, depending on their history and genetics and whatever. But if they've been struggling thus far, and they're relying on a meal plan to get there, probably not going to be successful.
Right, because it's taken them this long to get where they're at now, mm-hmm. and they want to change it overnight.
Yeah.
Now, you said, like, as far as, like, specific times, foods, all that, they expect you to do that with, like, just one conversation, you not even knowing, like, their schedule, what they normally eat, what they are maybe allergic to, what mm-hmm. they digest well, what they don't digest well, like, all that stuff. You're just supposed to come out of that, like, you're just supposed to give them these magic foods that everybody can handle.
Exactly.
At the same time.
And usually, exactly what you said. People just coming up like, hey, I need a meal plan. How much for, you know, what can be done? And like, just thinking back in my mind, the things you just said, like, what are you talking
yeah,
about? Like, that's not how this works.
What is your normal, like, I don't even know how your schedule is normally.
I don't even know what your workout schedule is, what your eating schedule is, what your preferences are, what your goal is.
Because most people, like, from what I see, like, the meal plan's out there, it's based on, like, a 9-to-5 job. Like, they're like, oh, this is, or it's not based on a 9-to-5 job, actually. Like, it's based, like, you have all this time to do all this, like, you eat exactly in these increments, and it's very strict, very rigid. And it's all, like, cookie cutter.
Yeah.
You have to have an almond or an apple. And you always see, like, certain things come up.
Absolutely.
You will always see fish. You always see rice, and you always see, like, almonds.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, your fats are coming from your almonds. You're getting your protein from your fish, and you're getting your carb from the...
Regardless if the person can break down almonds, or if their body's...
Or if they like them, or eat them, or if they can afford them.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
nuts are expensive.
Nothing comes into consideration of what the bodies actually can absorb.
Yeah.
I mean, I've met with some people in the CrossFit industry, and they're talking about, oh, I eat bacon every day. My program's bacon, 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 bacon.
Cool, man.
Not knowing if their body can even break down bacon correctly.
Mm.
They're just like, well, the program said eat bacon, so I eat bacon.
Yeah.
It's interesting because it's almost like the buzzwords that you hear in the media of like, these are the superfoods. You can't tell me I'm a sham if I put kale and almonds on there, because everyone knows
kale's been popular since 2000. I think it had a resurgence in 2013. For the past 3 years, it's all kale.
So that's safe. You can't call me out as a phony if I put kale on there. I'm like, no, what are you talking about? Look at the internet.
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone has
kale's good.
Kale's
almonds
good.
Almond milk. Yum, yum, yum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
Those are the expectations, and then kind of what we've been playing on the down parts, or what they should be, of you should expect to sit down with a dietitian and go through everything. Height, weight, age, your goal,
medical history,
time frame, medical history, diet restrictions, whether it's paleo or you're diabetic or whatever diet restrictions you have, food allergies, your eating schedule, your workout schedule, what supplements you have, things like that. So you should expect to sit down and lay all that information out. Food preferences, obviously if you're going to make a meal plan for someone, you should know what they eat and what's normal for them. Their usual walk around weight, like usual body weight, things like that. So you should expect to sit down for an extended period of time to hash all these details out. And then your expectations of what you're receiving shouldn't be a strict, rigid list of this food at this time. Nutrition time is very important for sports nutrition, and you need to have it at certain times, but you also need to have some fluidity with the types of foods you eat. And if your schedule changes, like my schedule sometimes isn't the same from week to week, depending on what's going on.
Yeah, like you might have a family emergency you have to change for, or you might have like... Some people may have, like, a different shift at work they have to work. Like, anybody in the medical industry, essentially, like, look at nurses and stuff, and there's 12-hour shifts they work.
Yeah. So, things come up, people cancel, classes canceled, or whatever. You need to know how to adapt. You can't be so reliant, like, oh, this says this on my paper, but I have no knowledge beyond this. So, I just did a meal plan Thursday and Friday is when I did it, and I sat down with him when I finished it to explain how to utilize this and what the... So there's still, regardless of a meal plan, there's still some education component on it, and people... That's what people don't want. They don't want to have to think. They don't want education. But I can't hand you a pill or a sheet and be like, okay, you're fixed. Just do this. Nothing but this. You have to have the knowledge and want to know how to utilize it. So... One of the questions this person asked, which was good, is like, so what happens if my 9 a.m. workout, like, I don't do that? Like, how do I go about this? And essentially saying, like, well, the purpose of me structuring this way is so you have that fluidity to move this meal back or up, or pre-workout, post-workout meals and snacks, depending on when you work out. The theme is that you're having something before, you're having something after, and you have this time to replenish before your next intense workout later in the evening. So you need to have that model. And I didn't give him any specific foods to eat. I took his food preferences, wrote them all out, put the macronutrients to him, the calories, the carbohydrates, protein, and fat, and then structured them in 3 categories, protein, carbohydrates, fat. And then essentially calculated out how much he needed per day and per meal, and then structured that out individually. Like at breakfast, you need X amount of carbs, proteins, fat. From your food preference list, here's your, you can have one protein choice, one carbohydrate choice, one fat choice. Make whatever you want to make. If you wanted to have, like one example I think he liked was the eggs, four eggs is a protein choice, and then he liked wheat toast with peanut butter and honey. If that's what you want to eat, that's what you want to eat. But the next day, if you don't want to eat that, that's fine. Just substitute things out on your list that you do and don't like.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, you still have to think about it. You can't, I'm not going to be like, you have to eat four eggs, this peanut butter honey toast every day. Don't deviate. That's not fun. It's not sustainable. It doesn't work for anyone. So your expectation should not be that I'm going to receive a piece of paper that has all the foods on there at the exact times, and it's never going to deviate. There's time slots in there, like here's when you eat this, this, and this, and it's worked around his schedule and his workout. So that's what you should expect. Outside of that, I'm sure everyone has different thoughts about what they want from it, but... Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've just seen in the last few months, actually, I even goes for probably last several months, you see all these ads on, you know, Instagram or on Facebook or even just email blast about, hey, you know, sign up for this. We'll give you a meal plan based on your goals. Do you want to gain weight, lose weight? What's your height? What's your weight? And all they ask is like three questions.
Mm-hmm.
What's your age? What's your sex? What's your goal? And then they just, boom, here comes your meal plan. It's $75 to $100 a month,
mm-hmm.
and you get it. And it's for the next 7 days. You know, you basically 4 weeks out. And so many people buy into that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I see trainers all the time talking about, oh, you know, I'm very good at body weight training. I'm very good at, you know, Olympic style training. But I feel like I can make more money if I get this nutrition degree or this nutrition certification. Mm-hmm. So then I can supplement my income because then I could charge them for training and I can also charge them for nutrition, which I'm like, okay, I get it. But, and we've talked about before, is if you spread yourself too thin, then your craft itself will lessen. It's like, just know what you're good at. If you're good at Olympic lifting, focus on Olympic lifting and then send that athlete to a person that focuses mainly on nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
But with the certifications out there, I mean, heck, you can spend $250. You take a test, you get the sheet of paper that says, oh, I'm a certified nutritionist now. By the state of Ohio, which basically means what? It's like someone that, say, take for you example, you're a dietitian, and like, oh, you just go online, get your certification, now you're a trainer. You have it all.
Yeah.
And it's, and I don't know why so many people, I don't know what's the word we're looking for, but I hear, you know, an athlete or basically more of a client will go work with their personal trainer. They'll work out with them and they're like, what should I eat? And then the personal trainer says, hey, eat this. I'm like, oh, okay, I'll eat whatever he tells me to eat. But then they won't go, instead of saying, okay, personal trainer, you're teaching me how to lift properly. Let me go out and venture out and find someone that can teach me how to eat properly. The same sort of profession that you are with lifting.
Mm-hmm.
But they go to the same person and they're thinking, oh, that's fine. It'd be like going to my mechanic and saying, oh, hey, help for my car. By the way, can you tell me how to work out as well? Or can you tell me what seat covers I should get or what color I should paint my car? I mean, it's like you're asking someone to do something that's technically not their specialty.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we go find out where these people are? I don't understand why people show. I can't imagine being lazy because they're hiring someone to help them become healthier, but then they take an easy route on that.
Well, you nailed it in the beginning, like diversifying and creating more money. So if their goal is to create more money, they're going to be like, yeah, I know how to do this. And then they diversify.
Yeah, because everybody has their own personal goals. And, I mean, a large personal goal for most people is money.
Yeah. So you're thinking of client special interest.
In this society that we live in.
Yeah. So, I mean, that is what it is. It's very unfortunate, but it's the nature of the health and fitness industry.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I think the long-term results speak for themselves, that that's not a sustainable long-term plan anyway. And it's much easier to take someone's money instead of having that hard conversation is, oh, your goals, this doesn't match your goals. So what you want isn't realistic, and it's not going to help you achieve what you want to achieve.
Right.
And you still need to learn how to eat and essentially figure out how to live this lifestyle to be healthy long term instead of relying on this short idea of like do this. And in the context I use meal plans for is competitions, for it's like athletes that are in very good shape. They have a pretty decent understanding about nutrition, and essentially they need help in a structured plan to get them to their goals. It's not someone who doesn't work out or who has just started working out, doesn't know anything about nutrition, and they just want to lose weight. This is not a long-term sustainable plan. So I'm very picky and choosy about like who I want to
do. Like the meal plans are for the short-term goals.
Yeah, and I have a competition, 2 months, 3 months.
They're aware that this is a short-term goal to this is a short-term solution to reach your goal, and then you're done.
This is to optimize your work you're putting in your gym. You're refueling your body, making sure everything's firing at the highest it can.
You peak, and then you, because you can't sustain that.
Yeah, you can't sustain that.
You can't sustain this extreme level of just
perfect eating
everything. Yeah. I mean, it starts to wear in the quality of life, and then it's just your body's going to adapt anyway.
Well, it's like when it comes to the training.
Most of the time when you compete, you're not meant to be at that weight.
For sure.
That's one thing we should clarify. As far as a lot of the weight-based competitions, you drop. You're this tall and blah, you're supposed to fight at this. That means if you want to fight guys your size, it's just kind of an accepted-ish thing now.
So I think
it's an unfortunate thing.
Yeah, I think the bigger problem that we have is a cultural problem, as far as maybe you shouldn't be dropping that much weight, and you should be instead of going from 200 to 170 to fight, maybe you should walk around at 185, and then in the 3 months that we have to work together, let's drop down to 170, trend down slowly, try to maintain your muscle mass and maximize your energy stores,
rather than put your body through this long catastrophic event.
Yeah, and basically I've thought about this, so you're wagering a bet. You're saying I'm going to be 30 pounds heavier on my opponent and stronger, and therefore I will have the advantage. But some people aren't privy to the fact of if this goes outside of 1 or 2 minutes, that advantage is now negated because I've depleted my energy and fluid and electrolytes so much
you didn't get your stores properly. Yeah. Your body's just going through everything at that mode.
Mm-hmm.
And then also you have less fluid around your brain because you dehydrated yourself. Yes. So you're more prone to injury. Your muscles themselves are not as hydrated.
Yes. But if you take that approach with fighters, they don't respond to health risk as much because they're getting punched in the head regardless. They're like, health is my number one importance. But the performance, you can go gear it maybe your performance is more important than your health.
Yeah, true.
So let me ask you, have you guys came to experience where you had a bad weight cut and it leaked into your performance?
Absolutely. I have.
I don't know that I have.
Well, you can't because you're the master of all nutrition.
I can never go wrong.
Yeah.
He had that established before he started competing in the weight-based competitions, though. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was all
So explain to me on your rundown before.
It was exactly how Brad said, cut a bunch of weight, and maybe I was a little bigger, but again, My stores, everything was just depleted. I felt like crap. And then also, just cutting that much weight for, fights the wrong way, I lost an extreme amount of muscle mass. And it just wasn't good. I would notice, I would be weaker going into a fight, compared to, all the work I was putting in.
Mm-hmm.
But it's because, all of my muscle was being eaten up because I was just, this humongous calorie deficit, not worrying about macros.
So you cut too quickly, thus it ate away your muscle instead of doing the progression. How you're suggesting is your weight cut should be 3 months out and progressively cutting away slowly. Now, when you talk about a gradual weight cut, what weight of percentage are you looking to lose?
But mine was gradual, but because of the way I did it, not focusing on the macros.
I see, okay.
That you needed, didn't focus on the protein and stuff I needed. So I was losing weight, I was losing a lot of muscle mass as well.
You're just cutting calories.
I wasn't able to sustain my muscle mass while losing weight.
Yeah.
And that's the key.
Yeah, it's a big problem with fighters because a lot of people, for some reason, they're anti-carbohydrate. They don't understand, those carbohydrates protect your muscle mass from breaking down.
Mm-hmm.
So, And it's really hard to go over it in, like, a short amount of time, but, like, micronutrients are just as important as the macronutrients, but you don't have a clear cut. Like, you need to have this much vitamin A and go through all the micronutrients. But essentially, if you're putting yourself at a calorie deficit and you're eating less, you're more at risk for micronutrient deficiencies and things like that. So you have to have a well-balanced eating plan and also maybe take a multivitamin to make sure you're, like, you have getting that protection. Them, yeah,
because you might not be getting from your food anymore.
Yeah.
So the food that you eat should be optimized, like,
mm-hmm.
they should, you should be getting the most out of what little you're eating.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And a lot of people just focus on calories.
Yeah.
Calories and no carbs.
Yes.
That's what they
and that, yeah, that's a recipe a for, like, cutting your muscle mass.
Yeah. I hear that a lot, especially people in the weight room, they're like, oh, I'm only eating 1,200 calories and none of it's a carb. I'm like, then why are you in the gym? Because I always tell people, carbs is your main source of energy when you work out. If you do a heavy workout with very little carbs in your system, you're going to crash.
Yeah, and then also, they're not aware of all the foods that contain carbs, so they'll often be like, I don't eat carbs. But, oh yeah, well, I eat rice, or I eat sweet potatoes,
because those are healthy. They think it's bread and pasta. That's yeah. what most people view bread carbs as.
Yes. Yes.
They think of bread and pasta, that's carbs, right?
Yeah, and they're like, oh, nothing but else has carbs. I eat sweet potatoes. Oh, I eat beans.
That has carbs
in it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a lot of carbs.
Corn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, again, know which way you go about this. There needs to be education. And right. that's not what people want to hear. They just want handed stuff.
Yeah.
But you have to educate because they don't even know what foods have carbohydrates in.
Well, it's different because, you know, rice is good. It's good for you. It's a good carb. Well, no, you said you're not going to eat carbs, but you're eating carbs.
Yeah. And then, okay, so rice is a good carb. Why is pasta and bread a bad carb? Is that because of the media's perception or is yep. that because you're eating white bread and white?
It's the media's perception. Yeah. That's all it is. Because, again, when we used to work at the hospital, we used to have little bags of – or big bags of the little Snicker bar, like the little bite-sized Snickers. Mm-hmm. When someone would go into basically – they get dizzy or they get, you know, nauseous or they kind of get to that point where they're about to pass out.
Yeah, you got the sugar and then you
– we'd pop them one of those things. And so many people have told me that. And I used to carry a bunch with me. Now I carry almonds or some kind of just sugary things in case someone feels that way the same way. And, like, you carried Snickers bars at the hospitals? I'm like, well, yeah, that's what we gave people. They're like, well, isn't that bad? I'm like, no, it's just a quick burst of protein, carbohydrates, and sugar. That's all it is. It's just to kind of get them back a little bit.
Yeah, so again, it's
just the little
the context is missed from a lot of people. Like, you don't want people passing out from hypoglycemia.
Mm-hmm.
Get them
mm-hmm.
what they need to get their blood sugar back in range. But again, people like to be extreme. Like, oh, I have to have all this free-range, organic, this and this, and not eat this and exclude all this. Or I'm just going to eat McDonald's every day. There's, like, no in-between. And then if you have, again, back to the buzzwords, I know Snickers bad, but I know sweet potatoes are good.
Right.
So it's
I'm
like,
have
I can't
four,
have...
I'm going to have four sweet potatoes.
Yeah.
Four whole sweet potatoes, but I can't have a single Snickers bar.
Right. Yeah. Which, if you look at the contents, it's the same. It's, say, the Snickers bar is 250 calories. And then
it
you
is.
Eat your... Whatever. Oh, it is.
Yeah.
Okay. 250 calories for the Snickers bar.
I may or may not know.
And exactly then you have your sweet potatoes, and say you get a giant sweet potato, and it's 230 calories, 240 calories. And you have two of those at a meal. And it's if that's what you're focused on, calories, but it's like, well, it's a good calories because it's a sweet potato, not a Snickers bar. But what are you using it for? I mean, again, if everything, like you said, if everything's built in moderation, you're okay. And if white bread is bad and pasta is bad because the media says it is, then eventually we're just going to think everything is bad.
Yeah, you don't people don't differentiate between white bread and wheat bread, and they don't know the difference, or white pasta and wheat pasta. So basically, like, well, if one's bad and processed, that means the rest of it's bad, even though it's not processed. And then, again, with the context of Snickers and sweet potatoes, yes, moderation and everything, and you have to understand that you have, like, phytochemicals in sweet potatoes protects against cancer and the vitamins and minerals. You don't have that in the Snickers, nor do you have fiber, and there's a lot of health benefits to sweet potatoes. But sometimes people eat healthy foods, quote-unquote healthy foods, and they gain weight. And like, I've been trying to lose weight.
They overconsume.
I don't, yeah, they overconsume. So they don't understand the different parts of nutrition of picking the right thing, eating the right portions, cooking it the right way, eating at the right times.
Yeah.
You have to have all of that.
It's hard
that's
than just
why
to shove
I can't,
stuff down your throat.
Yeah, that's why I can't just give you, like, here's three almonds and blueberries at this time, you'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
That's
yeah.
not how it works.
And I think most people struggle with, they get a box of whatever, or and they see the calories per serving, allow people to understand portion control.
Yeah, that's big. If you don't understand portion control, those numbers make no sense.
When you go out to eat, too, like most of those portions are, it's two or three portions. It's two or three servings.
Size, yeah.
When you go out to eat. But if you go out to eat a lot, you're looking at that portion now as your meal.
Portion, yeah, that's
one that portion. That is your serving. Mm-hmm. That, oh, this serves me. This is not, yeah. I don't take any home. And then you go home and you, that same kind of mindset leaks into, okay, well, when I make something, I have this big plate. These dinner plates are big.
Mm-hmm.
They're big. They're meant to be filled up completely, right?
Mm-hmm.
No, absolutely not.
They're getting bigger and bigger, it seems to me.
Yeah. I mean, for if sure. you've always looked at a dinner plate, it's always been very large. It's not like you have a large dinner plate.
Yeah.
It's the same for adults, kids, someone fat, someone skinny, someone old, someone young.
Same thing with the cup sizes. They're like ginormous. Mm-hmm. If you order a large cup or a large drink at some place, it's like what it used to be, like a gigantic drink 20 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, look at the cups you guys have right in front of you. Like, how many ounces are in this? 16?
32.
Yeah.
32?
Be 24.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Probably 24.
And then,
but you're luckily, I mean, you're filling it with water,
right?
But if you get, you say, I'm gonna get a cup of milk. I'm gonna get a cup of.
That's a lot.
Like, it's not a cup. It's like six cups.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm gonna get a cup, but you're referring to that as a cup.
Yeah.
Well, same way, like
of,
I'm gonna.
I've
have
only
like,
been having one cup of soda a day, and that's your cup.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm gonna have a bowl of ice cream. How big is your fucking bowl, man?
And that's the thing. Like, oh, it's a pint of ice cream. I'm only going to have a little bit, just one or two scoops. But, I mean, you're right. It's just we're over-consuming, and we think we're under-consuming. And that's how the whole thing is. Like, well, I'm eating healthy. I don't know how I'm getting weight. Well, I eat salads all day. Well, how big is your damn salad? How big is the bowl?
Anytime how much ranch you put on like, that? They think how, like salad is the epitome of like healthy. I was like, mm-hmm. Okay, well, what kind of salad are you eating? How big is it?
What kind of salad are you using? Are you using iceberg lettuce?
Exactly.
Are you
because
using
that's nothing.
Spinach?
Yeah.
Like, what are you putting on there? Do you have any other food groups in there? Or are you just putting croutons and salad dressing
I was like,
there?
You're just depriving yourself. I was like, and you're adding a bunch of sodium on top of it mm-hmm. with the salad dressing. I was like, there's nothing healthy about that.
And people don't, but again, for them, it's like anything else. If they want to be good at something, they have to go and venture themselves. But we'll go back to the car analogy. If my car starts acting up, I'm going to take it to a mechanic because I don't know how to fix the car. So I take it to the mechanic. He tells me this is going on. I said, okay, I believe you. Fix it. Let's go. Or we'll do is we'll shop around for mechanics who gives you the best value, who's being straightforward with you. But we investigate. We make sure that when we spend money on certain things that we make sure the money's being spent wisely. But then when it comes to our health, it's like, here's $100. Give me a meal plan.
Well,
no idea if the meal plan's even good or not.
I think the difference with like as far as like the cars is cars like you know they've been around for a while we
not
have
as long as us
I know that, but also we have a standard set on how a car should perform, what signs, like all these little red lights that go off like when something's messed up.
Okay.
Our bodies, I mean, we do have those, but we don't pay attention to them.
We ignore them,
and it's like we don't have that. Like a car, it's very black and white. It's like, oh, it's running or it's not. It's acting outside of its guideline. Whereas, like, you can't really have that with human beings because they're so different. Someone else's standard guideline may be different from another person's, but then you have the media and marketing machines generalizing.
Yeah.
And then you have all these other campaigns saying, oh, like, the whole, like, you shouldn't be against fat shaming and... But, I mean, really, you should just accept, like, big is beautiful, blah, blah, blah. Like, so they're saying, like, oh, okay, we're taking this, like, obese person and we're saying they're beautiful when they may, like, and the thing is, like, they're mixing messages. Yes, you should accept yourself for who you are.
Right.
But that doesn't mean you can go out and have, like, five Big Macs and still call yourself beautiful when you have a heart condition.
Oh, good point.
I think there's two different problems there. First, there's a perfectionistic society. You need to look like this. You need to have abs. You need to do this. And then the people that don't fit into that small little box have eating disorders, mental health disorders, you know, number of things. So you have that problem. But then on the other side, you have this idea that you have to be one way or another instead of like, okay, I can be obese and I can have good self-esteem and not have eating disorders, but I can also work towards self-improvement and improving my health.
Yeah.
But also, it's no one else's business of of that, you know. You shouldn't be telling me, like, some random person off the street shouldn't be telling me how to be healthier. Mm-hmm. I don't do that to people. I'm a health professional.
Want to sometimes, though, but you can't.
Yeah, you can't give unsolicited advice. And then back to the car person analogy, we built cars. We made that up. We didn't make humans up. We still don't understand us. We understand cars that. Mm-hmm. We don't understand the genetics yet of us, which is coming to get your genetic breakdown or your genetic breakdown and be like, oh, I know you have this genetics and you have this set. I'm going to approach this very differently. Mm-hmm. We're not there yet, but that's the way it's going.
But how about when you look at, like, say, our pets? I mean, you hear all the time about, you know, people have pets who are like, well, I only feed my dogs these certain foods because it's non-chemical, non-this, non-that. It's all the same. Pure just, food I can find for my dog.
They're projecting their own.
But then they go home and eat a Big Mac.
Yeah.
It's like, just their dog eats better than them.
Yeah. I mean, I personally can't tell people how to live their lives. I don't want people to tell me how to live mine. I think it gets hairy when we live in a society where we're all interconnected and maybe my finances are going to support your health problems despite you making poor choices. And right. I think that's outside the scope of this podcast, but
But I agree with you, though, is, you know, we're trying to educate people on the facts that, hey, you have a right to move well. You have a right to eat well. Mm-hmm. You have a right to these things. All you have to do is open your eyes and open your ears and just listen and see what's going on in the world. And I do get frustrated, too, is when, you know, I work hard to help people and to give my family a good life, but then I turn around and I see someone treating their body like it's a theme park, and I have to pay for their mistakes. That's sometimes hard to swallow, especially when the information is available.
Yeah.
And all they have to do is just ask.
My rebuttal to that, though, is you can take that same thing and apply it to different things.
So you can reply to everything.
Right. You can say you're choosing to focus your time and energy on health, and you're affecting people around you in positive ways, but maybe the way that the car you drive is polluting the earth and the food you're eating is contributing to global warming and the information's out there. You're just choosing not to act on it.
Right.
So you can say that about multiple things. Mm-hmm. But
then when I hear that person talking about how they want to be healthy. Yeah,
you're not donating. If you want a better world, right? Yeah, you've said that you want to make the world a better place, right?
Right.
So why aren't you dedicating all of your money to charity?
Because I still need to survive. Because, again... Your
priorities.
Right. If I'm living in a shoebox and I can't give back to the society that I'm trying to help.
You could live out of your car. You could live in a smaller house. You have a smaller, like, footprint on the environment.
I think it comes down...
These are all, like, valid points. Right. Just playing devil's advocate. Yes. Not trying to make you feel, like, ashamed for having a house.
God, I'm a son of a bitch. You really
but, yeah, like, we could all live in, like, these little... Shacks. 9x9 shacks with a toilet, a facility. Our footprint would be smaller.
We don't need cable TV. We don't need phones. We don't need any of this.
Yeah.
But like Dave said, it comes down to priorities. And I think where we come into play is when people want help and they actually want to change. That's where we come into play.
Yeah.
Outside of that, we don't come into play. If they say they want help, but they don't, or they don't want to act on it, that's out of our hands.
They have to make that conscious choice.
We can't help them. Right. And just like they're working on their... self-improvement with health, maybe we're working on our self-improvement in other aspects.
Restraint.
Yes.
Restraint.
So I think when you're looking at society as a whole and getting frustrated, you're looking at all these people, but really you should be looking at the small amount that want help, and they're mm-hmm. seeking your help specifically, and they're also wanting to change and are willing to put into work. That's a very small percentage. So if you look at that small part, you won't get as frustrated. And
I guess my frustration comes from when these people that don't look like they're taking care of themselves, but they say they want to be healthy. But like you said, they say one thing and do something else.
Yeah.
They're not literally going out and really want to make that conscious effort.
Yeah, a bunch of people say like they want stuff. They say they want the world to be a better place. They say they want there to be less strays in the street, but you don't see them adopting anything.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's like just,
people voice their desires and like. That's a thing where your priorities are different. Like, if you say you want something, typically you're the type of person that you're going to make that change.
Right.
So now, with that in your head, anytime someone else does it, you project your own principles on them. You're like, oh, they said it. Why aren't they doing it? Because that's what I would do. Mm-hmm. But then you have to remind yourself, everybody's different.
Right. They could be saying one thing, and it's just they're saying
that's just the type of
to get a reaction.
That's the type of person they were. That's the type of fame that they have. They're just... Maybe they grew up in, that's what everyone around, they always, like, dreamers, essentially.
Right.
Not doers.
And you know what? I'm more like you. Like, when I say something, to do it, but as I use the example of the environment with you, like, I've been saying, like, I'm going to get more into that and do more into that, and I've been slowly getting resources, but the amount of progress I've made towards it has been very little, just because of how busy I am. Mm-hmm. So I put, you know, my career in helping people in the health industry first and foremost, and that's kind of on the back burner. Like, I want to get to that, but I'm making very slow progress towards it. So if someone's looking through that lens of, you're saying you're doing, you want to do this, but your actions say otherwise, they would be judging me pretty harshly. Like,
yeah,
you're
exactly.
not saying what you're doing, but I don't have any more resources. I need to work less.
It's easy to, it's easy to judge book by its cover.
Mm-hmm. Again, you can always project your own. Always point fingers, and you always can make judgments, because it's easy to do that.
Yeah.
But the terms of healthcare, or just health and fitness, it goes back to, it doesn't seem like people don't took a very few, I'm not going to say that, not very few, but there seems to be a fair amount of people that don't take a lot of stock in the decisions they make when it comes to their own health. Asking for meal plans without second guessing. I mean, they don't know who's giving the meal plan. They're just like, oh, they said to eat this, I'm going to eat it, regardless if it's good for them or not. And then same thing, I hear people tell me all the time, hey, can you write me a workout to do? And a couple days ago, I was talking to an athlete, and I was trying to explain to him about how doing core work is not, don't look at it as doing core work. Use it as rotational movement or isometric contractions. And I was showing the proper way to do a leg lift, you know, keeping your lower back pressing to the ground, lift that leg up. And as I was explaining to him, a lady came by and she goes, well, that's not how I was taught to do it. It doesn't make sense. So I said, okay, do it your way. And she goes, okay, I feel this. And I explained to her how to do it my way. And she felt a different feeling to it. So she said it was more intense. But then I asked her what program she was doing. She goes, well, I got this program offline. And it said to do deadlifts and then do leg press. And to me, I'm like, that doesn't make sense. You didn't think about, why is a deadlift and leg press good to back up with each other? She didn't think anything of it. She goes, well, that's what the program said. She didn't take any stock in it. She didn't ask any questions. And like you've said before, if you can't ask questions about why someone's told you to do something and they can't answer it, run away. And it seems like, oh, I had no way to ask a question. I paid my money. They gave me the program. That right there is kind of scary. Mm-hmm. I mean, it could be like, oh, this lady said she's this age, this. She wants this goal. Here's her program. I mean, mm-hmm. who knows if she never said anything about her. She could have back issues.
Yeah, she had a double knee replacement.
Right. But, and that's the thing is, if someone's giving you something to do, you don't ask questions, that's mm-hmm. a problem. It's like a doctor saying, this is what you need, take this pill. Well, what is this pill, doc? I don't know, it's a pill.
I don't know, the drug company gave me a pen.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, oh, wait, that happens.
Yeah. Yeah. They said if you have headaches.
This Gardasil pen's wonderful.
Yeah.
Wait, that's for HPV.
Hey, they said it helps everything.
It's a cure.
It's a bra stroke. But, I mean, it's just, I don't know. I mean, we're so afraid to ask questions because I don't know if we're in that situation where we don't want to tick off the individual giving us information, or maybe we're afraid the fact that they don't know what they're really talking about. We don't want to put ourselves in a thing of like, oh, crap, they don't know. I don't know. I don't know where to go now.
Or maybe we're just such a busy society that we're like, okay, I'm in workout mode. Give me what I need to know. I don't want to learn anything else.
But being submissive to any piece of information would lead us poorly.
Yeah.
And that's typically how bad things happen, is when we just listen to the mass media or just the mass groups in general without taking any thought of our own.
And we just put a lot of stock into certifications and
mm-hmm.
pieces of paper that people have, rather than actually, like you said, being invested in your decisions or any knowledge you're receiving.
It's like, oh,
we just go, oh, well, they're certified.
I played this sport. I've done this thing in my life. I can teach anybody the same thing. Well, no, you can't.
Right.
I mean, I'm not saying I'm the best at everything, but or in my field, but I always see guys as like, oh, I was a fighter, or I did amateur boxing and this and that, so now that certifies me to teach boxing to everybody.
No, it is not.
I'm like, no, it doesn't.
Well, I mean, we put the same stock in degrees, really. I mean, some degrees are absolutely necessary, but like at any point, like someone goes, well, I have a bachelor's in business. I know everything about business.
That's all. Yep.
Rather than talking to someone who has 30 years experience, they are an entrepreneur, they made their own business, yeah. or they had a family business, and they just did that.
And they had no degree.
Yeah. Which one do you go for? Meaning, right. like, on payroll, person with a degree. They have a degree in it all, but they don't practice it.
Mm-hmm.
We're like...
Well, I've learned more about health and fitness in the middle of the industry than I did in books.
Yeah.
Books have helped me kind of get an understanding.
You have to get there. You have to utilize the knowledge you have.
Like, yeah.
Apply it. And then revise. And be willing to accept, like, changes. Mm-hmm. Like you talked about the nutrition industry, mm-hmm. Brad. Like, it changes.
Mm-hmm.
Because science changes.
Yeah.
So you have to be willing to accept that information and then move forward with it. How are you going to use that new information now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can't identify with it. If you're identifying with your practices, like, what I do is the best because of this, and then that this changes,
yeah.
you're screwed.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, just how you were talking about before, how, you know, everybody's different when it comes to how our body reacts to food.
Mm-hmm.
Again, like with Dave, the first time you did deadlift, you weren't best at it, but you've gotten better and better and better because you've learned from it. But I can take you and put you with someone else that, just say, athletically has very little skill, has very little body awareness. Well, just because they're in decent shape doesn't mean they can deadlift. So it's like the same thing. I can't give you guys both almonds and expect the same outcome.
Right.
And that's what I think. Some people are like, well, I can't do that lift. Okay, it's fine. You can't do that lift because you're athletically, your body just can't do it. Some people can't do certain movement patterns. Thus, some people can't eat certain foods, but they're so easy to accept. Well, I can't do that movement because of X, Y, Z, but I'll eat this food because that guy's eating that food.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
True.
It's like, that guy may be genetically gifted. That's why he looks the way he does, or she looks the way she does. Well, they eat chicken and fish all day long. Well, I'm going to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But you accept that physically they're different, but you should be able to eat the same food. It's like you put a Ferrari and a little Pinto next to each other. Oh, they can put the same fuel in there.
Or a diesel
right.
engine.
Diesel engine, just put it in there. And that's the thing I don't get a lot of, is like you're easily acceptable, the fact that, oh, they're different, I can't lift that weight, I can't lift this form, but I'll eat the same food they are.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like, okay, that makes no sense. You just agreed that the fact that they're different, but you can fuel the same way. And that's you said before, human body's a complex individual, where just because we look the same or act the same doesn't mean our body's going to absorb foods the same mm-hmm. way. Same way as if I put you guys in the exact same program, strength and conditioning program, your body's going to react a little differently than yours. I mean, that's just the truth. Or if all three of us in the program, our bodies are all going to react a little bit differently. Some may gain strength quicker, some may go slower, some may get big, some may get smaller. But then it's like the same thing. We're going to react differently. So the same way as if we all eat the same foods, our body's going to react differently.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily a good thing or a bad thing.
Yeah. I may be fine. You may run to the bathroom. Brad may throw up.
Right. And the same thing with the program. You may be fine. I may run to the bathroom and he may throw up. It's the same kind of
thing. I've never thrown up.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing. So each program, we've always, like, again, we've talked about with you, and we have the big groups coming in. We always have the baseline program set up. Then we have regressions and progressions based on the athlete.
Should be the same thing with food.
Same with food. We have our baseline, and
which
then we
is
have
your
progressions, right?
And you have your regressions, progressions within those.
But I don't understand why some people are so hesitant. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that, oh crap, I have to think, I have to understand this, I have to put more stock in my own body.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And one thing we've been kind of dabbling on. You have to also understand the health professional or whoever is giving you a meal plan, they don't know everything. I don't know everything. I can't tell you what, even though you're giving me a list of foods you eat, and I have research and a lot of standards and all these people who spent their life's work on developing these standards, and they have their PhDs and teams of these people, they don't know. So what I give you is not the end-all be-all,
right.
but it's a starting point. So the goal, again, which we probably should have said in the beginning, I give you this meal plan. We need to meet up frequently, see like what's working, what's not working, what do we need to switch around. Maybe you're close to the standards and we just need to tweak some things or not. Or maybe your body reacts so differently that we need to like go drastically in a different direction.
Yeah.
So don't, just because someone has a degree, even they have, say they have their PhD, they still don't know. I think if you're not in the science field, I think that it's almost like a faith. Like, no, this is gospel. This is science.
True.
It's very weird. But then if people who work in science, like, no. Don't be that certain, because we
gotta keep testing.
Yeah, we all have our PhDs, and there's teams of
hypothesis,
us. Yeah,
like,
we don't know what we're doing, essentially.
And also, we're testing it in a lab environment, a controlled environment. You have to go out, and there's so much more testing involved.
Yeah.
And even then, it's like, okay, we've just discovered this.
Exactly.
Of course, we're making new discoveries all the time. It's just that complex.
Yeah.
And then our technology is rapidly growing at a rate that we can't keep up with.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And the thing I always like to think about, there's something called TPN. You don't even know what it stands for. But essentially, we're giving nutrition through the IV. So in the 70s, we thought, like, oh, this amount of copper and micronutrients is best. It was literally labeled gold standard. This is the best research we have, the brightest minds. This is the amount we need to give you to help you survive and live and whatnot. And then 10, 20 years later, oh no, that contributed to killing people. We need to not do that.
That was the gold standard for filling up cemeteries.
Yes.
We didn't specify, but, you know, morticians were all about it.
So, but that's how science works, unfortunately. You try something, you think, oh, all clues point to this way, this is our gold standard, this is what we should be doing, and then we find out later that was not the way to do it. And only by trial and error do we find, okay, we start whittling down, like, okay, we're getting closer to...
Yeah, because there's never going to be, like, a perfect time. Like, you have to create, you have to get out there, and you have to test it in a live environment.
Yeah.
Well, how about the whole theory of you stretch before you work out? That was a big thing. Stretch before you work out.
I remember doing that in school.
Yeah that's stretch what they taught out. You in gym class. Yeah.
Which now we know is it's not a good thing to stretch before
you work out. Well, the static stretching is not good.
Right.
Yeah.
You should be do dynamic movements to warm up.
Mm-hmm. Well, and our whole theory is if you stay on top of your mobility program, you should be able to start a workout real quick. Once your motor's running, basically, once you have a little bit of warmness or heat, you should be ready to go.
Yeah.
I mean, I see guys still in the gym. They come in and they get there like a half hour early before they're planning on working out, and they do nothing but stretching. They can... Do you not do this at home? Well, no, I only do it before I work out, and I'm done. I'm like, why don't you do it periodically today? When wake up in the morning?
Yeah.
Before you go to bed?
We're staying in, like, behind our philosophy, we stay in, like, at least a semi-active state most of the day.
Yes.
Like, we're moving around, we try to stand up, we try to walk around, we try to stay engaged all the time. Like, I can't just completely disengage my body and sit down, like, for a super long period. And expect to be able to actually react. So even when I'm at work, like, you'll see me, like, if I have to sit down, I'm on the edge of my seat so that most of the weight is actually on my feet, on my legs.
Right.
I'm moving around. If I'm not sitting down, I'm standing up.
Mm-hmm.
I like standing up. I have a stand-up desk. Even though I work in a office environment, I'm at a stand-up desk. I try to, like, walk around. If I feel like I've been sitting down too much, I'll just get up and, you know, take a quick walk.
Yeah, I don't like sitting down either.
Anything that I can do to stay moving around. That was my little compromise. Like, there's certain areas I have to be in at work. I have to sit down. Like, that's the only thing I'm able to do there. So to compromise, I sit on the edge of my desk so my legs are actually still engaged.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you sit back in your seat, your biggest limbs of your body are not engaged.
Right. And then
disengage
your abdomen and all that
and then
kind of stuff.
When they're not engaged, the blood's not flowing to it. So then where's the blood going to sit?
Mm-hmm.
Everywhere else, like in your gut, did you just eat a bunch? You're going to get a bunch of just stay there?
Humans are the only animals that actually have to prime themselves to move.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we hear it all the time that someone can deadlift 500 pounds, but then they throw their back up picking up their cat. Because it's like, when I prime my body, I can get ready to go to lift this massive amount of weight, but then when I unexpectedly have to lift weight, we can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a sad thing. It's like, okay, here's an idea. Make sure we can lift. Because the idea of working out in the gym is not to be good at the gym. It's to be good outside of the gym. It's to be good outside our life and our competition
mm-hmm.
world, which everything outside of the gym is our competition world. Again, we don't eat well just to look good in the gym or on the beach. We eat well to sustain our life for the next 50, 60, 70, 80 years. That's the point. We're trying to fuel ourselves to live a long life.
And we work out in the gym so we can move through that long life and not have to have aches and pains walking up and down stairs.
We do.
We do, yeah.
Yeah.
Other people.
Other people, they go to the gym and they work out because they want to look good on the cruise they're taking.
Or they want to just intimidate people in society. I'm better than you because I'm big. Because
I look
exactly.
That's why.
They want to, they work out solely so they can brag about working out.
And I can see that too because you see how some of these people
walk.
Oh,
we do see it.
Yeah, and they walk around like, wow, this guy looks like he is so uncomfortable. And then they find out, like, oh, I threw my back out. Oh, doing what? Oh, I picked up my kid. Hold on. You tell me you can deadlift 600 pounds, but your 26-pound kid threw your back out?
That's why you shouldn't have kids.
Dangers of kids.
Dangers of kids throwing your back out.
They're the worst.
It's wow. But, I mean, you hear that a lot, and it's just mind-boggling. And, you know, I do my fair share of mobility stuff. And I don't like to call it stretching because I'm not really stretching tissue. I'm just making sure the tissue works the way it's supposed to work.
Mm-hmm.
I always think of stretching as you're pushing past the limits of the ability of the muscle. That's why I don't like to say stretch. That's why I call it rehab.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I call it prehab beforehand, rehab at the end. And again, I worked out with a gentleman the other day, and I get there. I do my simple, you know, shoulder dislocators, my Apollo stretch, and then, you know, some gator lunges, and I'm ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
He's there rolling at it. I mean, he's doing all the stuff I taught him, which is good, but I'm like, dude, don't you do your ankle mobility stuff and your knee mobility stuff when you wake up in the morning? Oh, I forgot to do it today. But you knew you were coming in and working out. So he spent 20 minutes getting ready to go to this workout. I'm just like just trying to keep moving so I don't – my body doesn't warm cool down. I'm thinking, we should be ready to go in a heartbeat. If all of a sudden this big storm came through and knocked this building down or we get attacked by a zombie apocalypse, you're dead. I'm running away. Because I'm ready to move. And you got to be like, hold on, zombies. Hold on, tornado.
Less
I got to stretch out my hip.
The fast zombies. Them are
they're scary.
Oh, like from World War Z.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, we're done.
We're dead. I'm not even trying to outrun
those
guys.
I'm going to sit down.
I'm just going to get sick. I'm just going to get sick.
Oh, get the cancer?
Or something.
Get the cancer.
Get the cancer.
The big C.
We just gave away the plot to World War Z.
It wasn't a great movie.
I liked it.
It was okay.
Brad Pitt was in it.
So that doesn't make it a good movie.
I don't think I've seen him in a bad movie.
I think there's been a few. What is it? Who was his first movie? Okay, we're not talking about Brad Pitt.
Oh, are we not? This is not what this episode's about?
Why not? This episode's not about Brad Pitt being a beautiful human specimen.
Well, I think we kind of
podcast.
Yeah, so am I. I think we figured out. Any last words? Are you done?
Brad Pitt?
About Brad Pitt?
I'm not quitting now.
You're quitting?
We're down a member. We'll be accepting applications.
We need the angry portion of the podcast. We need someone that's very vocal and hates
angry.
Hates the
I thought I was like the witty, inappropriate one.
Okay, that too. So we need that guy. We need to fill that guy in too as well.
Got it.
You
might need two people just to fill my role.
That would be tough. I don't want that's too many people. Unless, no, it's too many people. Brad, anything else to add on your ideas and your kind of, because you're the guy. So, if someone came up and said, hey, I'm looking for a nutrition plan, what are some of the pitfalls you would tell them to kind of be cautious about and or what you should tell them to ask for?
Well, I first start the conversation asking for the expectations so I can see if they're a fit for me or not, because not everyone's a fit. And then usually they don't ask, like, well, you know, what are some good things? But again, I would look for qualities like we described earlier. Having someone sit down with you, go over the times that you eat, the times you work out, the foods you eat, your goal, see if it's realistic or not. Also, there should probably be follow-up visits to that because no one's going to just like, oh, I got it. Here's what you should eat. And there should be tweaks made. But large number of times, people aren't going to want to come back. I mean, they just want to take it and go from there. But the opportunity to meet additional times to tweak the meal plan is also good. And then, you know, anytime I go to someone, I want to know their credentials, what they've been doing with their life. Is this something that's a weekend thing for them? Did they just get a certification? How long have they been doing it? How knowledgeable they are? If I'm doing meal plans for football, actually, I wouldn't be doing meal plans for football players because I don't know anything about football. I know nothing about the positions or the sport. So maybe that's something that you would look into. Are they knowledgeable about your sport? So that's why I've stuck to combat sports. It's what I like and it's what I know, and essentially it's the population I'm familiar with.
That's good.
So
I kind of agree. I mean, it's just
comes anything just before you take any information from anybody is understand who's giving you the information and is it trustworthy? Is it coming mm-hmm. from with knowledge base or is it, again, somebody read a magazine and says, oh, I know this.
Yeah.
Okay. Smart goals.
Smart goals.
Specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, timely.
Sounds good. Let's sign it off.
Ha ha ha! Good show!